Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 673. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about the second tallest mountain in Africa, safaris, concessions, national parks, and elephant orphanage as we go to Kenya. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Kenya. I'd like to welcome to the show Shane Dallas from thetravelcamel.com, who has come to talk to us about Kenya. Shane, welcome to the show.
Fantastic to be here.
And Shane and I have known each other for a decade or so by now. I don't really know when I first met Shane, but quite a while. He has not been on Amateur Traveler, though, before, and I am surprised to say that, but he has been on This Week in Travel three different times. So if you listen to both those podcasts, you may recognize Shane. And Shane, you know a little bit about Kenya.
Yes, I certainly do. I've been living there since August 2015.
And what brought you to Kenya, first of all?
So I left Australia at the end of December 2012.
And so this is not a Kenya accent. We do need to clarify that. Okay.
I am Australian, yes. And so I'd left in December 2012, made redundant from the job and just started traveling. And the longer I traveled, the slower I traveled. So eventually you are going to stop when you're on the road nonstop for years at a time. And Kenya, I know Maureen's Kenyan, and we had traveled through Namibia together. And we originally were going to go to Zanzibar, believe it or not, and stop there. But we found getting accommodation there for long term was hard because all you found was overpriced holiday apartments and vacation rentals, where it was much easier to find accommodation within Nairobi. And that's where we ended up. And that was in August 2015. And we've been there ever since.
First, the most important question, why should someone else follow in your footsteps and go to Kenya?
Kenya is quite an amazing place. It has a lot to offer people, and I'll go through them quickly, and you can then ask me to expand. But some of the highlights of Kenya, the most obvious one, is the wildlife. It's the home of the Great Migration, which occurs between July to October every year, approximately. Mm-hmm. That's when 2 million animals cross from the Serengeti in Tanzania into the Mara in Kenya. It's the same ecosystem, just the name of the park changes at the border. It's also got amazing food, a lot of influences from the Middle East, also from India and from the local traditional food, so that the food is truly outstanding. The people are very friendly. Kenyans are some of the funniest and wittiest people I've ever met. They have a wonderful sense of humor, and there is a sense of Africa in Kenya. And by that, I mean, so I live in a quite a nice area, and sometimes I'm walking down to the local supermarket, as you do, to buy some groceries for the family, and I'm walking, and it suddenly hits me. It's almost as if the breeze brings me a message that rustles through the trees, and I feel this beautiful energy that you feel in Kenya. It is truly a remarkable country.
Excellent. And for a 1 to 2 week itinerary, usually we do one, but for Kenya, we give you an extra week if you need it. What do you recommend for people?
Okay, first of all, most people listening to this are going to arrive from a very long way away.
Yes. Two night flights in a row for me.
When I'm going to the US, it's normally a two-night effort for me as well. So what I would recommend is you spend a couple of nights in Nairobi Nairobi has some attractions, but we'll get into those later. But spend a couple of nights in Nairobi, get over the jet lag, then head off on your game drives, your safaris. And you have different choices. You can go east to Savo West and Savo East National Park, north to Samburu and Old Pejeta, or you can head west or southwest, which takes you to the Masai Mara. Once you're finished with all that, you want to get maybe a little bit of downtime and relaxation, you head to the coastal areas. The two most famous ones in Kenya are Mombasa, the second largest city, or you head up to Lamu, which is right by the Somalian border, and it has some of the finest beaches you will ever see in the world. So you have a bit of city, a bit of wildlife.
Well, let's talk about Nairobi first. A lot of people express Nairobi as a place that one gets out from. But you want us to stay and see some things. What are you recommending, besides catching up on sleep and dealing with jet lag, what do you recommend we see in Nairobi?
Okay. The important thing when you're coming to Nairobi, and I'm going to state this now, where you stay is of critical importance. Mm-hmm. So if you have a look on a third-party booking website, hotel website, you'll see a cluster of hotels in the center area, downtown, mm-hmm. the CBD, Central Business District, and another cluster up in somewhere called Westlands. Unless you have an extremely good reason for staying in those areas, if you're doing business, having meetings, avoid them. And the reason is the traffic in Nairobi is truly awful. It is truly awful. And the closer you are to the airport, so there are now 4 or 5-star international chain hotels within distance of the airport, and some a little bit further away as well. You need to stay there. The other reason for staying there is that most of the attractions that I think are worthwhile in Nairobi are not anywhere near the city centre. So if you do stay in a city centre, you're going to be spending a lot of time getting to the best sites in traffic and to and from the airport in traffic. So my recommendation, my favourite one, is the nickname is the Giraffe Centre. It has the rare Rothschild giraffe there. Advice to get there in the morning. It opens at 9 o'clock every day. The later on it gets in the day, the more people are, and the harder it is to feed a giraffe. And if you're really game, you can put a piece of giraffe food in your mouth and it will kiss you as it takes it out of your mouth with that rough, long tongue. Wonderful. It's my favorite place in Nairobi. Also nearby is one of the most respected wildlife conservation foundations in all of Africa. It's called the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, DSWT. They deal with orphaned elephants, and it is only open, to the best of my knowledge, I remember it's 11 to 12 every day, apart from Christmas Day. And so you can't go any other time. And they will bring out the orphaned elephants, and they will talk to you about each of the elephants, the history. You'll find out that a lot of the elephants in this orphanage are actually, most people think, oh, it's poaching. It's actually not. Most elephants in there are there because either the mother has died through animal, snake bite, something like that. The baby elephant's fallen into a hole and can't get out again. And so they tell you these stories. And those are within close proximity of each other. You can actually start off at the Giraffe Centre at 9, get kissed by a giraffe, get slobbered on by your hand, head down to David Sheldrick, and then backtrack to Karen Blixen House, which is where Karen Blixen lived just before she decided to leave Kenya. And that has, even in Karen Blixen House, I must say, it's quite pricey. It's about $10. It might have changed since then. But it actually has closed at Meryl Streep and Robert Redford wore in the movie.
When you say the movie, some people are not of our age.
Out of Africa. The Academy Award.
I know right away which movie you were going for, but I'm not sure that some of our younger listeners have necessarily seen it. We should recommend it, especially if you're going to Kenya.
Recommend it. It's a slow movie, so they don't expect car chases or plane chases or anything. It is a movie, but beautifully, exquisitely acted. And so that is there.
And the cinematography ain't too shabby either.
The photography is outstanding, isn't it? And then the last thing I would recommend, if you are not going on safari, is to go into Nairobi National Park. Doesn't have the density of wildlife and some of the other famous parks, but it's interesting. When you land into JKIA, Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, you fly over the park. And more than once, when I'm landing in Kenya, I've looked down and seen a herd of giraffe walking below me as the plane is landing. It's quite remarkable, but you can actually have a picnic in the park because there's no elephants. And elephants, of course, are the most dangerous of the land animals in Kenya. It's not lions or...
I would have thought hippopotamus would be the most dangerous of the land animals.
They are a river animal, but that is okay. The two most dangerous are the hippo and the elephant. And it's easy to avoid the hippos because if you're not near water, they're not there. But elephants are very territorial. And during the day, they can come out from anywhere where the lions tend to sleep in the day and they're more active at night. That's generally their pattern. So therefore, you can have a picnic area in the day where the biggest danger are the monkeys who want to steal your food. So I would recommend those activities. And they are all basically in the southwest of the downtown area of Nairobi. So therefore, if you are away from the downtown area, you will have a nice drive there and back. If you go into downtown and you are anywhere near peak hour in either direction, it will be a tiresome journey.
Okay. And when you were saying elephants being the most dangerous animal, I find, having been in safari recently even, that it's especially if you're there without a guide who would recognize when an elephant is in musk. And if it's a great big bull elephant by itself, off alone, and is basically in the male equivalent of heat, you don't want to be anywhere near that elephant. Even the other elephants are leaving it alone.
I've seen a car that was attacked by a bull elephant at that time of year.
Well, and it's not a time of year is the tricky thing. It can happen, yeah.
It had been squashed like a pancake. And I spoke to the driver. I'm amazed they got out because the roof of it had squashed down to the level of the top of the doors where you would wind up the windows, that point. And I said, how did you feel? He said, I thought I was going to die. And I can understand. So the thing is with elephants, just to give you a bit of an explanation, elephant families, so big herds of elephants, they're matriarchal.
Right.
There are no adult males in that. What happens is when a male gets to a certain age, they're kicked out of the herd. Mm-hmm. And some of them just don't handle this very well.
Well, and usually they'll be in a young bachelor herd at that point.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And some of them don't handle it and they can become particularly aggressive. Any lone elephant you see is a potential threat. Any lone elephant you see is a potential threat. That's how you should treat it.
Yeah. Well, and again, there are other signs that if you're with a guide, the guide will know. If you're with anybody who has been around, if you're by yourself, if you're doing a self-drive, yeah, let's just stay away from the lone elephants. There's a reason why this very social animal is by itself.
That's exactly right.
Excellent. So you say if we are not going on safari, so that would be if I'm there on business or something else, because otherwise I'm going to Kenya. I really should go on safari.
I mean, safari, the term, is actually a Swahili word, which means...
To travel.
To travel. And its origin is actually from Arabic, safara, which also means to travel. So that's what I was saying, that the Swahili language is actually made up of the coastal languages and Arabic. So some of the words in Arabic and in Swahili are the same. So the safari, it's where it all comes from. If you've seen The Lion King, a lot of the terms, Simba, lion in Swahili, Rafiki, friend in Swahili, Hakuna Matata, also Swahili. So even though I don't believe it's actually set in Kenya, almost all of the language they use is actually Swahili. And Swahili is spoken, just to clarify, in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and some parts of Rwanda. Mm-hmm. So it is
just
really the
East
language
Africa.
Of East Africa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the language of East Africa. So you've got to go on safari. Obviously, the biggest time to go is that July to October period, the Great Migration. It is truly astonishing in every way. If you do choose, remember you can choose to stay within the Mara National Reserve, which is now administered by the Maasai. The Kenya Wildlife Service handed control over the Maasai a few years ago. Do remember that if you're within the park itself, you cannot do any night safaris. If you stay in a conservancy around the area, this is my recommendation, you can do night safaris. Now, other advantage of a conservancy is that it costs extra to go in. Now, that's going to cost you more, but it means you will basically see a lot of animals on your own. So I remember when I saw the Great Migration a few years ago, there was a family of leopards. I think they were all brothers sitting under a tree. There must have been a dozen plus cars just trying to get around this a traffic jam. There's these three leopards who were just minding their own business, wondering about the attention. Before that, I had seen in one of the conservancies a lion feeding on a wildebeest, and there were two cars, including the vehicle I was in. And there was no crowd. It just had a different feel. So if you are going to head into the Mara, yes, you're going to pay more in a conservancy, but the conservancy allows you, in my opinion, to see more animals with less traffic around you. So that is one of the highlights. Another area, if you head up to Samburu National Reserve, Samburu is known for its elephant population. Remember the I mentioned the vehicle that was flattened like a pancake that happened in Samburu.
Which generally doesn't happen, we should say.
No, it generally doesn't happen. No, no, you have to be bad. That was actually someone with Save the Elephants. They were actually doing research on elephants. So it shows you even an experienced person could be caught unaware. So as the rule is, don't stay near lone elephants. And also Samburu is famous because every time I've been there, I've seen a leopard.
Wow. Well, and we should say that leopards are what I will not guarantee you see when you go to Africa. Took me, well, I guess, two trips till I saw a leopard because they are nocturnal hunters, for one thing, and so they tend to hide more during the day. So that is pretty cool if you're saying that I have a better chance of seeing a leopard there.
Yeah, without a doubt. And also remember that leopards hate the sound of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So cheetahs seem fazed by vehicles. They will walk around them. They'll use them. I've been in a vehicle where a cheetah has used the car or the safari vehicle as a hiding spot to attack some antelope without being spotted. And they have problems. But a leopard will never go near a vehicle. Lions don't mind it. If you have a tribe of sleeping lions and a vehicle draws up, one of them will look at you, put its head down, you're no threat. I'm not going to eat you either, so they'll just go back to sleep. But a leopard will always walk. That's why they're so hard. Also in the area, I would recommend Old Pajeta Conservancy. It does have a high rhino population. It is one of the last homes of the endangered rhinos that you will find in Kenya.
And that's the black rhino there?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but they've got the last surviving ones on Earth in there. That's where they're kept.
And the confusion there, part of my confusion is comes from that the black rhino and the white rhino are the same color, which is gray. The name does not come from color. The white rhino really is the wide rhino because it has a wider lip. Then the people who heard that decided that the other one must be a black rhino. Because so that we call them by colors that they're not.
You couldn't tell them apart if you had them one next to each other. Really can't, apart from the lip, of course. But the other place that a lot of people only stop at briefly or totally miss is Mount Kenya. It's famous. Mm-hmm. It's the second highest peak in Africa. I know people who have hiked that in Kilimanjaro. They preferred Mount Kenya as a hike. There's a safari lodge there, the Serena Mountain Lodge. It overlooks a waterhole. So if you don't feel like going on a game drive and you just want to sit in your room overlooking a waterhole, the animals come to you. And what you can do is you can fill in a piece of paper and it says, I will be woken up if any of these animals come by. You can tick the big cats and all this. But what's interesting,
brilliant.
we stayed there for 2 nights. We found that at about, so most people check out at 11, 12, and the next group doesn't come in at 4. And as soon as 12 o'clock came, guess what happened? About 27 elephants came out of the jungle, and an equal number of buffaloes came out from the other side, from the forest, sorry, not the jungle, and they all converged in this waterhole because they know when they're there, there's no one around. So the people who happen to stay 2 nights, this was peak viewing time. Animals everywhere in the middle of the day. It was fantastic. So my recommendation, if you are staying there, is actually to stay 2 nights. And that period, around midday to 3, stay by the waterhole. And the last one I must mention is the combination of Amboseli and Tsavo West National Park. And Tsavo West and Amboseli have that terrific, iconic view of an elephant or a giraffe walking in front of the snow-capped peaks of Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. Mm. And that is where you get that from. So they are – look, there are more parks than this. Trust me, there are far more parks than this. But we've only got a certain amount of time to talk about them. But that gives you an overview of what you can see. And just one quickly thing as well, the geography of each of these is quite different. So the Mara is the wide plains. Mm-hmm. And so you can be quite a long way from an animal. Where the opposite of this is Tsavo West, which is a lot smaller. It's still a very big park, but it's quite densely
forested.
Yeah, forested. And therefore, you're not going to see as many animals, but when you see them, you're right
see them up close. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to see them close. And that it's harder to see them close in the Mara, I reckon.
Well, and some logistics here. So if people haven't listened to some of the other episodes we've done on Africa and they're listening to this one because they know that Kenya is a place that they should go, it's a once-in-a-lifetime trip to a lot of people. They're going to go online and they're going to Google Kenya Safari. They're going to find the $20,000 safari. They're going to go and they're going to have a great time. And that is certainly one option. You were talking about people just going to parks. That's obviously a different option. What is the range of options and then what do you recommend?
Okay, so there's different types of safari vehicles. There's four of them. And I'm going to go from least preferable to easily the best.
Okay, you're starting with the bus.
You're correct. I'm starting with the bus. Mm-hmm. Now, if you see a very cheap safari package, you have to ask yourself a question. Are my park fees included? Now, in the case of the Mara, the park fees are $80 per day. In the case of most other parks, it's $50 per day. In Nairobi National Park, it's per person per day. It's about $25-$30, if I remember correctly. So the prices vary. And therefore, if you're seeing a really cheap price, make sure that the game park fees are included, mm-hmm. or you're going to get a really nasty surprise. A family of four turning up at the park at the Mara for two nights is basically going to be hit with an extra $640 in fees. This is a bit of a scary thing. So make sure you know if the fees are included. And a lot of these tours that do that thing, so the fees are extra, will go in a minibus. Easily, the worst option you can go. It's uncomfortable. It's not designed for dirt roads. We have dirt roads in Kenya. They're not designed for dirt roads. The hot, the stuffy, and visibility is rubbish. The second option is your normal off-road vehicle that you see driving around the streets. Mm-hmm. It is better, but it is hindered by a lot of spaces which don't have windows. And therefore, even if you have a pop-up top version, and I've ridden in one of these, I've ridden in all of them, I've ridden in every one of these that we're describing.
And when I did Africa, well, specifically the other side of the Great Migration there in Tanzania 15 years ago, I want to say, that team tended to be the most popular vehicle was four-wheel drive vehicle, pop-up top, so that literally when you stop, you're standing up in the vehicle looking out over the roof. That's the one you're talking about.
That's the one I'm talking about.
And that used to be ubiquitous.
Yes, and it still is to a point, but I can tell you it is not ideal. It's certainly better than the bus, but now we come to the best two. These are specially designed vehicles for safaris. Mm-hmm. They have a high wheelbase and are extra long, and they have almost no windows on the side. So you've got effectively a 360-degree view, with the exception of a couple of little bars that obviously keep the canopy so it protects you from the sun. These are the only vehicles to be in my opinion, because it's comfortable. You mm-hmm. have everyone has a window seat. They handle the bumps better than anything else on the road. And if you want the safari experience, you've got to look at that. So if you're looking at a camp or a tour operator, look at the vehicles they are using. And if you see that pop-up top one or the bus, I would keep looking. I would genuinely keep looking. I would not do a safari again unless it's one of those specialized vehicles. And I've been in safaris in many places in Africa. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, the specially designed, long, high wheelbase vehicles are the best you can find.
Well,
and
now
safari.
I would say that is what I expect to see. I still see the bus, obviously, but I haven't even seen a pop-up top vehicle now in the last few trips. This has become the standard for vehicles. And what it really is a heavily modified Japanese pickup truck or something like that is pretty typical. When I say heavily modified, owner spent about $20,000 to modify this with stadium type seating and a rag top, and usually seats 7 passengers and the driver comfortably and 9 less comfortably.
Yeah, it varies. And a lot of the ones I've seen, they've had 4 people on each side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 8. And then a seat in the middle at the back, 9, which is a perfect seat if you've got a little person with you,
mm-hmm.
because then you've got mum and dad either side and it can stop them suddenly reaching out where they shouldn't be reaching out. So I find them fantastic, and you're correct. But the last time I was in a safari was a little, and I still saw the pop tops. They're still around.
Well, I wonder if they're more in East Africa than they were. Southern Africa has been my last 2 trips, so that's why I was curious. Interesting.
They're still there. They're still there. I've
now you had the bus, the pop top, the special vehicle, and you had a 4th.
The 4th one is the variation of the special vehicle.
Got it.
Some special vehicles have glass, some don't, and it's the ones without the glass are the best ones.
Okay, I hadn't seen that with the glass. Interesting. Okay.
I've seen the glass one, yeah. They're more covered, so it's a bit of a hybrid between the fully open one and the off-road vehicle. And I just don't think it works. Some of it is not glass, but some of it are these flaps that come down, and it's kind of this, you know, this plastic, what do you call it, that heavy plastic windows,
sure,
and so
yeah.
If it rains. And it is necessary at times. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about once you start looking through websites on different game drive vehicles. As I said, look at the camps and have a look at their vehicles, and if you're going on a tour, ask what are you being driven around in, because it significantly impacts on your enjoyment of the safari. So if we're choosing a city such as, let's pick Dubai, okay, I go to Dubai a lot. It doesn't matter how much money you spend, you are still going to get the same experience if you watch the Dubai Fountain. If you're going to the gold suit, that is not going to change. But here, you can't just wander off on your own. You are totally...
No, they don't recommend that.
No, this is a very unwise idea. So you are totally under the control of who is taking you around.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if you're in an uncomfortable vehicle, you will be in one the whole time you are there. If you're in a comfortable vehicle, you're going to be comfortable the whole time. The other thing with safaris, and that is very, very important, with they call them game drives, is check how many hours of game drive you have per day. Do you have just 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon, or do you go out all day? And in some cases, you pay a little bit more money. Let's say you might pay an average of $600 a day, and you get 2 hours of game drive in the morning, 2 hours at sunset. But you might pay $700 a day, and you get 4 hours in the morning and 4 hours in the afternoon. Well, which is better value? It's much better to spend the extra money to spend as much time in the field as possible. And my final tip on game drives, the 2 best times are sunset and sunrise, mm-hmm. especially sunrise. If you want to go out early for a sunrise, my advice is go on the game drive first and have breakfast later.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in Savo West once, and there was a 6 o'clock call to go out. And I was there, 6 o'clock, I'm ready. And the other people hadn't turned up, and it was 6:03, and they said, let's go. So off I went. And the amount of wildlife was quite incredible, I saw. I mean, elephants and giraffe, that was 6 weeks old. It was fantastic. Got back to the camp. The people who were supposed to join me came later. They left at 6:30. And I said to them, how was it? And they said, we didn't see much.
Yeah.
That half hour was the difference. So forget having your breakfast. Ask the people you're with, go out before sunrise, see the sights, come back, have a late breakfast, and you will definitely not regret this decision.
I know that I can pay a different price for a different safari depending on how I book it. What are your recommendations for getting a good price for a safari?
Use local.
Okay.
Use local. Use people based in Kenya. It's pretty easy to find, because when you go to their website, look at their home address. Is it a North American address? Is it a UK address? Or is it a Kenyan address? And those based in Kenya, the costs, the overheads are actually lower. They're closer to the ground. They have more contact with the conditions around the place. So I would always try to go for someone who's a local operator, because they understand the area better and their overheads are going to be less than someone in an expensive downtown office in New York, for example. And those costs will be passed on to you. So look at different sites, look at different tour operators, have a look who is based within Kenya. One way to do this is always to look at reviews. So on TripAdvisor, some people give reviews to different tour operators, look at websites and blogs, and also be aware that some of the tour operators in Kenya particularly will not have websites, mm-hmm. but they will have a Facebook presence. And this is a trend within Kenya where there are people that have whole shops, especially selling things such as baby clothes and clothes and cosmetics and women's fashion and accessories, and none of them have websites, but they have extremely active and popular Facebook pages. So don't write off a place just because it doesn't have a website in Kenya. But do your research, get some reviews, look around.
Well, and from a conversation we had while we were not recording, you don't have a particular operator that you would recommend.
Yeah, I don't have one particular one. I was going to do a tour there at one stage, and I did have someone lined up, but because I didn't go through with that, I can't really say that was a fantastic tour operator. Okay. But it's things change. New operators come up, some operations fall away. It's really hard to pin down, but I would always go for the source. I would always go into Kenya to get someone who's based there.
Well, and just to put that in perspective, we've done shows, for instance, again, Tanzania and Kenya share a lot of the same animals. They go back and forth. And when we did shows 15 years ago or so, we literally did one show on Tanzania, which was a $20,000 safari 15 years ago. This was the saved all my money, did the trip after I retired. And then we did another trip that was my trip where we were working with a local operator out of Arusha in Tanzania, the kind of operator that Shane is talking about. And I think the fees must have been less for the parks down in Tanzania or less at that time. They've probably gone up since then. And we were paying $200 or something like that. Or yeah, I don't even think it was $200 a day. I think it was like $300 for 2.5 days of safari. So I'm sure they're more expensive than that now, but it's not the same order of magnitude when you're using a local operator.
I mean, I know some of the prices. I know what the prices are in Kenya because obviously being there, you can get a really top-end safari, and I mean really top-end, and you will be paying, including full board, return, internal flights, and you might be paying during the Great Migration Series season $800 per person, twin share per night. And you think of that price, and then when you think of a $20,000, you've got to be away a long time to get anywhere near that figure. And so I would certainly, again, restate, try to look for something local because your pricing will be better.
Well, and then in terms of places to stay, that again runs a gamut from the camping safari, as we've talked about in the show within the last year in Southern Africa, the lodge, and then the lodges run a great variety of price ranges, and then self-drive would be the other options. Do you have some recommendations in that area in terms of where you would stay depending on your budget?
Lodges are becoming less common, definitely less common now. Yeah, in Kenya, without a doubt. The most common ones are the luxury tents. And it's interesting when people think of luxury tents, they think of all school holidays tenting. I can tell you, I've stayed in tents with chandeliers.
I haven't seen the chandeliers, okay.
And bronze bars, your standalone bars. Trust me, there are some extremely luxurious options. So I would go for the tented safaris. Do remember that some of these places will have a minimum age restriction because, of course, as soon as you step out the door, flap of your tent, you can have animals. So it's not really ideal for certain children. Some places will allow it, some places will not. So you need to check that. Also, and I need to state this, is that some places, if you have a child under a certain age, they will require you to have your own vehicle. And your initial thought is, whoa, we've got the whole vehicle to ourselves for the family. The minus is you have to pay for exclusive use of a vehicle, which is going to be maybe $200 to $400 extra a day. And so lodges are probably better for families, I think, but I still think the tented safari is best. A self-drive safari, my recommendation is not to do so because, as you said before, there are some intricacies with the animals there that you really need to know. The other minus for the self-drive safari, and I've noticed this, is a fantastic camaraderie amongst the game drivers.
Oh, absolutely. They will share information, yeah.
And they will share information to say, hey, we've seen a leopard.
They'll get on the radio and tell people they've seen a leopard. Yep.
Yep. And then everyone will go there. If you are on your own, you will miss that information. Guaranteed. So if you're staying with a camp and it's got, say, 9 or 10 tents and there's 4 different vehicles out, if one of those people finds something that's fantastic, he or she, normally a he, will radio to all the other drivers and they'll all converge from the same accommodation. You will miss that as a self-drive. I don't recommend self-drive at all. I think that the tented accommodation is the best. The food quality in these places is fantastic. Also be aware, and this is very important, is they do have rules about wandering out at night.
And they're there for a reason, yeah.
They're there for a reason. Just don't do it. There are some options you can do in some parts of the Mara and also in Amboseli. In the Mara, you can actually go on safari on the back of a horse, and that is quite amazing. So I rode up to a herd of giraffes, and the giraffes weren't sure of us. But the most amazing one was riding into a herd of zebra. And I was with a few people. I was with Maureen, and we were the only two on this with the people from the camp. And I said, I would love to ride my horse towards the zebras. Zebras on my own. And they let me. And as I was riding in, the horse was calling out to the zebras, and they were calling back. It was amazing. It was incredible to experience that. Now, had I not been on the horse, the zebras would have stayed. But because they saw there's a strange smell coming, that's not a horse, and that's something else, they walked away. But that experience of riding on a horse as it was calling out to the zebra was one of my favorite memories. If you go to Amboseli, I believe it's still accessible, an old Pajetta, I know it is, you can do camel safaris. And supposedly the camels and the giraffes get on very nicely. Hmm. So the giraffes will come up to the camels, which I think two of my favorite animals, this would be just the ultimate in a way, in a safari in Kenya.
Well, you also talked about beach holidays. Before we get to that, anything else we want to do to wrap up, put a bow on safaris, besides do it?
Remember in Kenya, don't come in April. It's the rainy season and all the roads get boggy. Don't even think about it. A lot of parks close in April. They'll open sometime in May again. So forget coming in April. Remember, if you come between Christmas and New Year, you will pay a surcharge. If you are not coming in peak safari season, if you're not coming in the great migration period, the Mara, it is harder to see animals. I have been there both times because there's not as many and such a wide area. I would instead head to places like Samburu, Savo West, Old Pajetta. If it's the Great Migration, it's something you must do at least once in your life. It is truly astonishing. Oh, one other thing about accommodation you were saying, as I said before, try to stay in conservancies, try to stay in camps which have the better vehicles, try to stay in camps which have less people in them than more people, and just read reviews. Read reviews of what people are saying. The standard of these luxury camping options in Kenya is of a very high standard. They'll even have Wi-Fi. It may not be perfect, but at least it will connect you with your family and friends home. You can tell them how fantastic time you're having. So highly recommend the experience. Yes, there are cheaper places to do safaris in Africa, especially places like Zambia. But if you want that top shelf, that A grade, the 5-star experience, you got to come to Kenya.
Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor, and that's mytravelcreditcard.com. I think it's clear if you've been listening to Amateur Traveler that I love travel, but I don't love paying for travel, or at least I don't love paying extra for travel. That's why each day I help pay for my travel just by buying my groceries, my gas, and my gadgets. For a number of years now, my wife and I have used travel credit cards for our daily expenses. Then every year, we reap the rewards by using the points we earn to pay for airline tickets and hotel rooms. We get extra benefits along the way, like airline credit cards that let us waive luggage fees and hotel credit cards that give us a free night a year. Travel cards we use let us avoid foreign transaction fees when we travel overseas, which also saves us money. We pay these cards off every single month, and that's the smart thing to do. That way, other people are paying for our travel instead of the other way around. If you don't know where to get started, you can go to mytravelcreditcard.com, and we've picked a small number of great travel credit cards that I personally recommend, including the best starter card. Right now, the card I reach for first is from Chase, but if I find better cards, then we'll update mytravelcreditcard.com with our best picks. So check it out and let me know where you go with your points. And then you talked about the beach.
Yeah, beaches. There's a couple of beach areas. One of them is Mombasa. Mombasa is a very popular place with expats, actually. And I actually haven't been. I've not been. But it's a very popular place with expats, but it's very much a city which has nice beaches. So some people would prefer something a little bit more isolated. So you can head out of Mombasa north or sometimes south. They're away from the crowds and the noise and the congestion. And in these places, you will have a really idyllic beach place. You can get there by road and by train. There's a new train service with some very nice carriages. I think they came in from China, the carriages. So you can take that train journey. And supposedly, there's some nice wildlife to see on the way if you are lucky. If you decide to go to Lamu, check the security situation. It's by the Somalian border. And so sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good. Currently, as of the time we are recording this, it's good. And there hasn't been problems there for many, many, many years. But you just need to check. Lamu Island is a UNESCO World Heritage listed old town. There's only two vehicles on the whole island. One is the police, one is the ambulance. Everyone gets around the island by boat, walking, or the most popular method, by donkey. And that's how people get around the island. It's quite a conservative area, so you don't want to be walking around. It's a Muslim area, so be aware of dress standards when you're there because you have to be aware of the local sensitivities. Also recommended, if you do go to Lamu, don't go during Ramadan because
people are grumpy.
It's the fasting month and everything's closed. Now, what's interesting is I left actually the day Ramadan started, and I noticed as it was getting closer, those couple of days leading up to it, there was less and less food options available, and people were preparing for the fast. So just be aware of that. There are some, you can get camel rides on the beach there, down towards Shella Beach. There are some very high quality boutique properties there. Again, do your research. It's not the cheapest place to fly. The reason flying within Africa generally is expensive is, and I couldn't work it out either until I attended a airline conference earlier in the year, mm-hmm. and they were talking about how expensive the airport taxes are. Really expensive, basically triple what you'd pay in Europe.
Well, I have not seen in Africa the cheap intra-country, even inter-country flights are surprising, especially if you're used to Europe, which I think has such cheap flights.
They do. There are some options. So, for example, Nairobi to Zanzibar, you can get that for a fairly good price. And remember, there are two different airports, JKIA, which is the main international airport, and then there's Wilson, which is a smaller airport. And if you are going on safari, definitely easier to get in and out of Wilson.
So I have not been to Kenya. Now, technically, I have been to Kenya. I've been to the airport, but I don't count that. But the airport is, when I was there, and again, this is 15 years ago, was the most complicated, disorganized airport I've ever been in anywhere in the world. And we moved through 10 people with, I was going to say 20 suitcases. We'd already lost one. So we were down to 19. We left the airport with 10. So we were down 9 that didn't make it to our flight. And that was with hiring somebody as an expediter, which we basically had to do because we could not understand the system. And it's not a language barrier. English is widely spoken in Kenya.
Yes.
It was a more of a cultural barrier and a system that we just didn't get it.
It's better now. They have a new terminal now, which has Kenya Airways, KLM, and Air France fly out of that terminal. And it's a lot more modern. It's actually very pleasant, very, very pleasant to fly in and out of as well.
I'm pleased to hear that.
You'll be very pleased to hear that. You still have the old terminals, which, okay, could certainly improve. But it's overall, it is a better situation. One piece of advice, remember, if you are flying internally on a local airline to some of these safari destinations, there is a 15 kilogram which is about a 30-something pound allowance, 33-pound allowance, including hand luggage. It is strictly enforced. So they may refuse to take your bag. They prefer soft bags and hard bags.
Right.
So my recommendation is when you fly into Nairobi, pick the hotel you're going to stay at when you arrive and stay at the same hotel when you leave. When you bring your stuff in, so you're going to have extra stuff with you, put one bag you do not need, put it in the left luggage locker, take what you need with you in the other bag, and if there's two or more of you flying, it's 15 kilos per person, and then come back. Stay at the hotel before you leave and then head to the airport.
Well, and you say they prefer soft-sided. In my experience on Africa flights, they preferred a duffel, not even a soft-sided, like a roller bag or something. Yeah.
Yep, they're correct. They don't take roller bags. Roller bags do not work well in national parks because there's lots of stones. But roller bags only work going within airports because as soon as you leave an airport, in most countries, you've got bumps and ups and downs and rollers don't work.
You're clearly using the wrong type of roller bag, but I understand. For these things, though, they're not going to work for you. You're not going to get on the flight. So you need a duffel.
You risk it. You may get it on the flight. Yeah. You run the risk. And you talked about some of the bureaucracy that can happen. Mm-hmm. If you come up against that with your bag, you've got no way. There is no way of getting around it. So just play it a bit cautious and have basically in your mind two sets of items or two ways of packing. The first is to get in and out of Kenya, and the second, the small safari planes, is when you go on safari and just take the stuff you need for that safari.
Well, in Southern Africa, we were actually able to even to leave some luggage at the company, the small airplane company that took us. I'm not even sure we call that. You just would need to check that out. I wouldn't count on that being the case. The hotel is always a good option.
You can do that. Yeah, it is possible to do that with some of the airlines within Kenya.
And to check it out, ask. Excellent. Those were a lot of my questions. Do you have any more leftover answers that you haven't had a chance to use? Oh, health. We didn't talk about what you need to get in.
Yes, there is one inoculation you must have, and it's yellow fever. You will not be able to leave the country unless you have evidence of a yellow fever inoculation.
And by evidence, you don't mean like a scab or something. You mean a yellow international vaccination record.
Correct. You do. This is what you must have. If you are going to some countries, I know in some countries where I have left Kenya, I have been asked to show my yellow fever before they let me board the plane. It has happened once when I was going into Netherlands. It's happened, I think I was going into Malaysia once as well. So you will need to show that. It is compulsory, even though Kenya has not had a case of yellow fever for a very, very long time. You still need it. So our daughter, we had her inoculated just after the age of one. They don't recommend it in very, very young infants. But at the age of one, we had her inoculated. She cried, of course, as you do when you're a baby and you get a needle in your arm. She had no health effects. I know people have asked me personally, do I really need it? A bit concerned about the health effects. And I said, well, if you want to come to Kenya, you have to have it. There is no way around it. They will stop you boarding a plane if you don't have it and you leave. Okay, so once and now, remember, yellow fever's for life.
Yeah, it used to be a 2-year vaccination and now they say it's for life. Yeah.
It was 10 years originally. About 3 years ago, they made an announcement that if you are currently under a vaccinated period, mm-hmm. you are now extended for life. So I don't have to get another one. It actually made me sick after I took it, so I'm very glad of that. The other thing to consider is malaria. This is your choice. My opinion is I don't take malaria tablets. Remember that malaria is only at a certain altitude. So in Nairobi, the chances of getting malaria is incredibly small because we're at altitude. Once you head onto the Mara, you're in a far lower area. Same with the Savo, where most of the parks are in a lower area. Malaria becomes a problem. You can take tablets if you so wish. Some of them have side effects. One make you hallucinate. And I've heard of someone who went on a safari and hallucinated that an elephant was charging them. And they ran out of the van, but there was no elephant. So be aware that some will make you hallucinate. I used to take one that gave me too much heat sensitivity, and it was just too deleterious. There's a long word for you for this time of the interview. For me to take, and now I don't take them. And I would prefer to wear long clothes, and use the repellent to keep the insects away. You have to be unlucky to catch malaria, especially if you take the precautions, sleep under mosquito nets. In Kenya, they'll provide you in these places the mosquito zapper and you put something in the power plug and it, and this aroma wafts through the tent, which may not be that pleasant to you, but it's not fatal as it is to mosquitoes. And I personally think that, as I said, I'm not a doctor. That is your choice what you do. But be aware of malaria, so you need to take some precautions with the medication or clothes and mosquito repellent, and you definitely need that yellow fever. I hope it changes one day, but at the moment, you've got to have it to come to Kenya.
Well, and we recommend that you talk to your local travel clinic for what else you may need. I know the first time I was in East Africa, I had to get 4 different shots or something like that. And then I am on the other side of that versus Shane. For one thing, I don't live in country, and so I'm only coming in for 2 weeks, which is different than being there long term. But I do take a Malarone. Larium is the one that has the potential of giving you a vivid dreams, is one of the ways they say that. I've had Larium before. The first time I was in Africa, I had Larium. I did not react to either, so I do take that just as a precaution, because I've had friends who've died of malaria, so I just don't take chances.
I use doxycycline. Doxy was great until I started to get these side effects. And it was just too much. It was too much. But I know that now, living there in Kenya, I don't know anyone who lives there who takes any medication. They just protect themselves by the mosquito things and other aspects. So I can understand if you know someone who's died through malaria, it is a potentially, it can strike so quickly when it hits, and it can be, it's a terrible, terrible thing. But it's not as common in Kenya as you think. You don't hear many people talking about malaria outbreaks. I know many people have had malaria, but in terms of the really nasty outbreaks, you don't hear a lot of it. But as I said, to each their own, there's no right or wrong in this one. Consult your doctor, do what's most comfortable with you.
Excellent. Wrapping this up, you're standing in the prettiest spot in all of Kenya. Where are you standing at? What are you looking at? And are you on a camel?
Anything on a camel is always going to be gorgeous. And I can't remember the name of the rock, but I can remember the name of the place. West of Samburu, there's a place called Westgate Conservancy. Mm-hmm. And you head up there early in the morning, and it's this rocky outcrop, but it takes a little bit of climbing, nothing difficult, goodness me. And you stand up there, and it's as if the world goes on forever. From this site, you can look over the Owasu River, and there's this flat plain, and there's another small mountain, as it were, a very steep hill in the distance, and the sky is as large as you can imagine, and the plains are as large, and it's as if you could see forever. And that is a very special place to see. Not very few people will go there because it's quite isolated, but I remember there's a photo I still post on social media occasionally of me wearing my fedora looking out at this view, and everyone comments on it. There's that sense of freedom and openness, and you can almost smell the fresh air as you're looking at the picture. Kenya has many such beautiful sights, and the only way to know which one suits you is to get there yourself.
Excellent. You were talking about Swahili, and Ninasema Kiswahili Kidogo. I speak just a little Swahili. The one thing that I love about Swahili is that the word for stranger and the word for guest are the same word. And it just tells you a little bit about the hospitality. Now, that's not uncommon. Swahili doesn't have an overabundance of words in my experience. Ninasema computer fundi. I am a computer mechanic, programmer, expert, repairman. Those are all the same term.
A fundi is someone who does something very well. So a fundiwa computer is someone who does something very well on a computer. It's not necessarily what. If something's broken in the house, oh, we'll just get the fundi.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I remember talking about this with Maureen, and she said there are some words in Swahili that there's no term, especially the modern technical terms. So they just borrow English. So computers, computers. Phone is phone. You know, camera's camera. So they just borrow the English because the vocabulary just never needed to extend to that. Swahili is a very nice language to listen to. And I must say, and also remember that, I mean, there are 42 tribes right. in Kenya, mm-hmm. and they all have their own language. So there's two languages that unite them all. One is Swahili, and the other one is English.
Well, and as I recall, I think Kenya's school system works this way. If you grow up in a tribe that is still speaking their language, Ki, whatever, then your first 4 years of schooling are in the tribal language. Your next 4 years are in Swahili. And then if you go on, the next 4 years are in English. Is that still the case in when if you don't grow up in the city?
I'm unsure of, but I know it is very common for people to have multiple languages. So Maureen is the most wonderful person in the world. She's Kikuyu. So she speaks Kikuyu, Swahili, and English. Mm-hmm. And this is quite normal to have people speak multiple languages.
Yeah, trilingual is pretty typical in East Africa.
Is very common. So I would say that it could happen that way. I'm not an expert. If I was Maureen was sitting next to me, I'd be quickly saying, you know, is this still happening? But she's not with me. I'm talking to you not in Kenya at the moment, so I can't. And I tell you something else about Kenya. You talked about the word for stranger and friend is the same. Mm-hmm. There is one thing about Kenya, and I compare this to Australia. I think there's more appreciation of diversity and tolerance in Kenya than there is in Australia. Even though all the different tribes, and all the tribes mm-hmm. have different abilities. For example, the Luo tribe are the musicians. Barack Obama was a Luo. The Kikuyus are the business people. The Kalenjin, I think, are the runners. A lot of the athletes are the Kalenjin. And everyone has their specialty. And they all get on really well. Elections come. Be careful. There are tensions at elections. It brings out the worst in people. So around an election,
We have the same.
But the thing is, as soon as the election's over, everyone's friends again.
Yeah, we don't have that same anymore.
Yeah, no, it's very different here. But everyone really values the other cultures and really values the other tribes. And there is a sense of oneness in Kenya amongst these. And of course, not everyone's going to get on. But that tolerance they have of other tribes and tolerance for the differences they have, like all of them have, you know, a certain food they like having or a certain way they speak or a certain way they speak English, but everyone's accepted. And I've commented to a few Kenyans, I think the value or the respect people have for different cultures within the country and different tribes within the country is far superior to what I see in Australia. And that surprises a lot of Kenyans. And I said, really, you should be very proud of what you can achieve or what you do achieve here, because that friendliness, that beautiful warmth that you get from Kenyans goes into every facet of their life for about 4 years and 11 months of every year, apart from the month around an election every 5 years. And apart from that, it's fantastic.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Kenya.
Okay, two things. I have never seen a place where the men and women will wear their best clothes to go for a hospital visit. I can't work out why you're wearing your best clothes to go for a visit to the hospital, as in you are becoming a patient. It's quite amazing. And I find this, but why are people dressed? The second thing is the way Kenyans clean their ears. Now, this is, you've got to see this. This is quite incredible. And I love Kenya. But the way they clean their ears, instead of just, you know, how we do it, the Mzungus, where the white people wear the Mzungus is a little bit gentle. They really get their finger in there and so jar it around
Mzungu
the light.
Would be white people. Mzungu would be white person.
Yeah, white person. Mzungu. So really getting into the ear, and it's very vigorous, and there's a lot of energy expended in cleaning this ear, and the look on the face when some people do it, it's this kind of this ecstasy. It's quite funny, and I've told Kenyans about this, and they think it's a very funny observation from me that I've seen the way they clean their ears. But yes, the way they people dress when they are being admitted to hospital, and the way they clean their ears, I think, and also the other thing which is really nice, one other. Is when women talk amongst themselves, they have a laugh. And you always know when there's a group of women talking because there's this beautiful laughing. It's this high-pitched laugh. And it only happens when women are talking to each other. It's this women's talk. And so I don't understand it, so they can talk around me and I'm not going to understand a thing. oh, I might pick up the odd word, but it's basically women's talk. But their laugh is this infectious, beautiful laugh. So if you're female listening to this and you can somehow get in one of these conversations, do so, because it could be a very amusing affair.
Excellent. And I got grief from somebody recently that I've stopped asking this question. So I'm going to ask you, if you had to summarize Kenya in three words, what three words would you use?
Welcoming, diverse, grand.
Okay. Excellent. And Shane Dallas has been our guest from thetravelcamel.com. Shane, do you have a best post that we should direct people to if they want to learn more about Kenya?
I have a post on my website, is the Essential Guide to African Safaris.
Perfect.
Which covers everything you could ever want about safaris. Everything we've talked about and more. But also on social media, The Travel Camel, Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that post in the show notes. And Shane, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Kenya.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to skip the community portion of the show today because I'm actually traveling as I'm recording this and putting this together. But if you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget mytravelcreditcard.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be